You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
John Banville, the acclaimed novelist and Booker Prize winner, surprised the literary world in 2006 when he took what seemed to be an unusual career turn and began writing a series of crime novels about a Dublin pathologist named Quirk under the pen name Benjamin Black. Now he's taken an even sharper turn and written his first novel featuring Philip Marlowe. Yes, the Philip Marlowe made famous by Raymond Chandler in classics like The Big Sleep, Farewell My Lovely, and Long Goodbye. This new caper, The Black-Eyed Blonde, is published by Henry Holt, and I'm delighted that it has brought Mr. Banville, or maybe I should say Mr. Black, back to our show today. Hi.
Hello.
I've talked to you as both.
Yes, I'm suffering from multiple personality syndrome.
Well, you've written more Benjamin Black novels in recent years, haven't you?
Yes, I've written about, half a dozen, maybe more. I'm losing track.
Is that because you can write them more quickly?
Yes, I write them over the summers. I hate the summers. It's the most boring season of all. So I use up the summer by doing a Benjamin Black book.
And you do one book at a time?
Oh, yes. I tried at the start to do a Banville book and a Benjamin Black book at the same time. You know, one in the morning, the other in the afternoon. Couldn't do it. I have to be one or the other.
Because the characters are in your head even when you're not actually writing.
It's not so much that, but it's two entirely different ways of writing. And I can't slip from one method into the other method in the space of a day.
Now, why would you want to write a novel in the style of Raymond Chandler, featuring his famous detective? Have you been a fan of his work?
Oh, yes, I started reading him when I was in my teens. My older brother introduced me to him. It was a great discovery for me because up to then I'd been reading all those English lady novelists, women in flowered frocks with murder in their hearts. Agatha Christie, Josephine Tay, Dorothy L. Sayers, about a dozen of them.
They're fun.
But they are, but they're crossword puzzle books. You know, when you get to the end, which you think, oh, you know, the butler did it in the library with a lead pipe. So what? Well, Chandler was a great discovery because, you know, he invented a new genre of fiction.
Well, he and James M. Cain, both great stylists. Chandler was a master of metaphor. Does that present a problem for you?
No. I'm also a master of metaphor.
But what about simile? Are you good on similes?
Yes, I'm very good at
Dashiell Hammett is another one. They created something quite different.
Yes, but what Chandler brought to it was elegance and wit. Chandler's books are funny. It's very difficult to be funny in a crime novel. Also, he brought the first person to it. I'm just thinking, of course, James M. Cain does that in Poison Always Rings Twice. But it was a new, suave, elegant, witty kind of crime fiction.
Was he your model when you began writing your Quirk novels, which are set in 50s Dublin?
I think Chandler is a model for practically all crime writing now. If you look at the television series that are running on HBO and Netflix and so on, the writers of those may not even have read Chandler, but they're influenced by him.
Well, how does a book like this come about? Was it your idea, or did the Chandler estate commission you to do it?
No, it's very simple. My agent, Ed Victor, who is a very inventive man, always on the lookout for something for his clients, something new for them to do. He also represents the Raymond Chandler estate, and he came to me and said, how about writing a Marlowe book?
Well, wasn't the late Robert B. Parker, who was the author of the popular Spencer novels, hired to complete an unfinished Chandler manuscript, which was published as Poodle Springs in 1989. And then that got good reviews. But then he wrote a sequel to The Big Sleep, Perchance to Dream, and it was panned, and then he didn't write another.
Mm. Well, I couldn't possibly comment on that.
But did you read those books?
I read Poodle Springs. Uh-huh. Yes. Which I quite liked.
In recent years, there have been new Sherlock Holmes, James Bond novels, long after the author's deaths. And ironically, there is a new Spencer novel following Robert Parker's death. Has this become accepted practice now, building on popular characters after the creator's
death? Strange. There are fashions in publishing, as there are in everything else. And the fashion now seems to be for follow-up novels.
But these continuations are generally written by people who have yet to make a big name for themselves, not man Booker Prize winners.
Well, you know, I was turning 60 when I invented Benjamin Black. I thought this is a good time to embark on a new adventure, a frolic of my own. Now that I'm in my late 60s, you know, I'm doing a Marlowe book.
Do you think that if this book is a success, people will go back to some of the original novels?
I hope so. I would like to think that younger people will read this book and will be encouraged to go back to Chandler, because Chandler's a wonderful writer, really wonderful writer.
Well, how do you go about recreating his style, which has been parodied a lot, but obviously you don't want to make it sound like parody?
No, I wanted to write in the spirit of Chandler. But, you know, the stronger a writer's style, the easier it is to imitate. I couldn't write a John Kutsaya book, because Kutsaya writes very, very clear, translucent, transparent prose. You know, I would just sound like newspaper if I did it. But Chandler's style is so idiosyncratic that it was easier to follow than if he'd had, you know, a very bland style.
So did you analyze the sentences before you got going?
No, I did notice a trick that Chandler has. It's a very good and very clever trick, and it's a sort of a signature of his. He never leaves a sentence alone. You know, he'll say something like, I walked into the room, but I'd rather have been walking out of it. Mm-hmm. There's always a second half to all his sentences, and that gives him lots of opportunity for wit.
This novel refers to some of the characters from The Long Goodbye. Do you see it as a sequel?
If I were to say that, it would give too much away.
Well, the plot will be familiar. I'm not going to give any spoilers here, but will be familiar to anyone who's read the originals. A beautiful woman, the black-eyed blonde of the title, hires P.I. Philip Marlowe to find her ex-lover, who is supposedly dead, but then again, maybe not. Numerous plot twists ensue, including romantic interludes. And that sounds like a Marlowe novel.
I tried to write a classic Raymond Chandler, Philip Marlowe novel. Before I started writing, I thought I would, I'll move Marlowe on. I'll make him more contemporary. I'll develop his character. Then when I went back and read the books, I thought, why should I interfere with this? It's perfect.
So you had to imagine what being a PI in Los Angeles would be like in 1950s, or at least Philip Marlowe would be like in Los Angeles in the 50s.
Yes, but it's possible to imagine anything. I mean, think about your dreams last night. Think of the worlds you imagined while you were asleep. I do it when I'm awake.
My guest is Benjamin Black. That's the name on the book and the cover of the book. His latest novel, The Black-Eyed Blonde, is about Philip Marlowe. Philip Marlowe as the first person narrator. That's another thing. You have to get into the mind of this man who had strong opinions in all of his previous novels.
Marlowe is a very, very interesting character. I see him as... Chandler sometimes made Marlowe be quite brutal, but I think he felt that he had to do that because of the genre he was writing in. I see Marlowe as a man who is tough but not hard. I think he's quite soft. I think he's a decent man. I think he's that rarest of things nowadays. He's a good man. He's not pious. He's not, you know, he's not goody-goody, but he is a good man. He does his best to change the world in his tiny corner, you know, to see justice done as far as he can. He's a sort of hero for our time. We need more people like him, more fictional people like him.
He has run-ins with his wealthy clients' relatives, police detectives, Mexican gangsters, other colorful characters. Are they all based on situations that Chandler wrote about, or are you?
Well, Marlowe is
expanding it.
Marlowe is he's what in the old Western you used to call an ornery creature. He's against things. He doesn't like authority. He doesn't like being told what to do.
Although he says he has nothing against Mexicans.
No, he's nothing against Mexicans. No, he's... Well, you know, this is one of the things that people say that Chandler was misogynist, that he was racist, that he was homophobic. He was a man of his time. This was in the 30s, 40s, 50s. Everybody made appalling jokes about minorities. The fact that everyone did it didn't make it right, but everyone did it.
So because you're writing for a 21st century audience, do you have to give him 21st century values or at least explain his values from the time he was created?
Oh, no. I take it that people who read this book will at least have some notion of Marlowe. They'll have seen a movie. They'll have seen The Big Sleep. Everybody's seen The Big Sleep. Even people who haven't seen The Big Sleep have seen The Big Sleep.
So was Humphrey Bogart in your mind when you were writing this?
No, because Chandler wanted Cary Grant to be Marlowe. And I think that Cary Grant would have been a perfect Marlowe.
You also have to get all those 50s California details right. The landscape, the weather, the architecture, flowering plants, clothes, shoes, food and drink. Everybody smokes. Did you have to imagine yourself in that world to picture all those details, or is this just what research allows you to do?
I was born in 1945, so I can remember a time when everybody smoked and everybody made bad jokes about minorities. I remember that time. It was a very different time to now, but I remember it very clearly.
Well, the title character, whose name is Claire Cavendish, comes from a family that runs a perfume business, and we get the scoop on how the perfumes are made. You obviously did that research.
Yes, I did that little bit of research, but that's the kind of research that you do in the afternoon at 3 o'clock when you're bored. You think, you know, I've got to do something here. So, you know, mug up on the perfume trade. It's, you know, this writing this book was such fun.
Well, you don't have cell phones, email, answering machines. Marlowe is always calling people from pay phones.
A blissful world in which there,
or he has to get to see them in person.
Everybody wasn't chattering to everybody else in those days.
Does that make plotting easier in a way?
Yes, it does, because it's always easier to write about the fairly recent past. Things are simpler, and the technology was simpler. That's one of the reasons I set my Bench and Black books in Dublin in the 1950s, so I wouldn't have to learn about all this new technology that pathologists do. It's a kind of form of laziness, right?
All your crime novels are written under the name Benjamin Black. Unlike J.K. Rowling and Robert Galbraith, it's never been a secret that John Banville and Benjamin Black are the same person. Why, then, did you feel the need to use the pen name?
I just wanted my readers, my John Banville readers, to realize that I was doing something new.
I mean, Graham Greene just would have called these entertainments.
Perhaps I should have done that. Perhaps I should have, really used a pseudonym and not let people know it was me. Let them find out.
As J.K. Rowling did, unfortunately.
Yeah, she was very annoyed about it. I think she's suing the person.
Which is sad, because the book became a bestseller after people found out. Before then, it was a bit of a bomb.
Yes, but I think J.K. Rowling really doesn't need a bestseller at this stage of her life.
On your website, you have a conversation between your two personas, and at one point, Black says to Banville, "Your books think, mine look and report." Is that how you define the difference?
Yes, I think so. And I would say that the Banville books are the result of concentration. The Black books are the result, I hope, of spontaneity.
Now, do you think you'll be doing more Marlowe's, or are you back to Quirk?
I have Quirk. He's down in the crypt. And the lid is closed on him for the moment. He's having a little rest down there. But I can bring him up anytime I like. I'm going to do another Benjamin Black book, but I don't think Quirk will be in it. I think I might do something in contemporary Ireland. Contemporary Ireland is very interesting after the economic crash, mm-hmm. and so many people lost so much.
I was thinking, I mentioned Humphrey Bogart, but Robert Mitchum and Elliot Gould also played Marlowe in different films. If a film is made of this book, who do you think, what contemporary actor other than Elliot Gould do you think could play it?
I have two candidates. One would be George Clooney and the other would be Liam Neeson.
Mm-hmm. Any
because talking? One of the reasons for that is that they both have a quality of melancholy that Marlowe has. There's something essentially sad about him. I mean, there's a melancholy in him. He looks at the world with a tired eye and says, look at this dreadful world, what can a decent man do in it? And I think both those actors would catch that marvelously.
Any talk about doing that?
We're always trying, but it's just been published, so.
Benjamin Black's latest novel, The Black-Eyed Blonde, is published by Henry Holt. And next time I see you, are you going to be Benjamin Black or are you going to be John Banville?
I suspect I'll be John Banville. But you never know.
Well, I look forward to that.
So do I.